Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
He inspires small business.
We can teach these barbarians a lesson in Western methods and efficiency that will put them to shame.
He tells it like it is.
I realize how difficult it's going to be in this godforsaken place where you can't find what you need. There's the challenge.
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
With all due respect, sir, I believe this is going to be our finest hour.
We're back. It's 34 after. Thank you very much for hanging around with me today. 800-531-3815. Toll free coast to coast. And my website is www.jbsba.com. Check it out when you get a chance. And don't forget to subscribe to my newsletter. Comes every week by email. And you'll be one of over 10,000 happy subscribers. Well, about half a dozen people decide they're not happy and they unsubscribe, but other than those six people, all the others are happy subscribers to my newsletter, so check that out whenever you get a chance. Fred Siegel is our guest, ladies and gentlemen. Fred, as you know, is an outstanding investment advisor. He's the president of the Siegel Group. He is the author of a very fun book and a very informational book on investing called Investing for Cowards. And he's the host of his own radio show on Saturdays, broadcast all over the Western Hemisphere. And he's our friend, Fred Siegel. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, I'm glad to be back. It's a beautiful morning.
Yeah, it's good to have you back with us. I want to come back to something that we were talking about the last time you were here, just for a little bit. I want to remind people, get you to remind people what you call chicken stocks.
Right.
And then, folks, after we talk a little bit about chicken stocks, I've asked Fred to talk to us about jargon. I'm imagining that a lot of you listen to the investment shows, the stock market shows, and maybe there are some things that they talk about that might go over your head a little bit. So we're going to talk about jargon a little bit. But before we do that, Fred, let's talk about chicken stocks. What are they?
Yeah, they're stocks for people who are chicken or afraid of the stock market. That's chapter 3 of that book.
Weenie investors. They're weenies, right?
Right. Well, yeah, they're you know, but the chicken stocks were the ones that made the money over the last 3 years.
Right.
So you can really make a lot of money. It's a strategy I've been performing with the portfolio since about 1981, and it's proven to be good and excellent in good times and good and bad times.
Mm-hmm.
So it allows people to sleep at night. Essentially, Jim, what a chicken stock is, to meet that criteria, is that that's a stock that has had higher earnings or profits, and we'll talk more about that in jargon, but earnings and profits rise every quarter for at least 12 years. That means you have...
Every quarter for 12 years.
Right, and that means you have a company that's providing goods and services that are needed, or at least perceived as needed. The public wants it, and they're blue-chip stocks. And what they do is not only do they raise their earnings or their profits every quarter for 12 years, but then they pass that on by raising their dividend every year for 12 years.
They're not stingy with what they earn, are they?
No, and the dividend is going up. That means more income that's coming to the shareholder, and that tends to support the price of those shares. So they can go up and down. You know, the price of a stock is random and unpredictable over the short term, but over the long term, they tend to keep up with their earnings, their dividends, and if you have that as a criteria for a large part of your portfolio, some people want 100% in there, then you know when to sell, because if the earnings don't go up or the dividend doesn't go up, then you sell it. It's no longer a chicken stock.
It also says that the management has their cornflakes together, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no question. It has to have good management there. And so that indicates that you own a piece of a business that is well managed, that people continue to buy. And if they've done well for 12 years, the odds are they'll continue to do well for the foreseeable future. Now, we also have, since the book was published, we have developed what we call our chicken stock cousins. And that's only 19 stocks, but those are stocks that have raised their dividend every year for 50 years.
50 years?
50 years. Now, they're not quite as strict as far as the criteria for the earnings or the profits, but those profits go up at least once a year, and so that's still pretty good. And we're finding that they tend to perform in the market the same way that the chicken stocks do. So that's what we call chicken stock cousins, and one example of that is one everybody knows, that's Procter & Gamble.
Mm-hmm. ENG out of Cincinnati, Ohio.
Yeah.
You should do some business with those guys. Okay. Now, I wanted to ask you last time, and I didn't have time. In the late 1990s, and we might even not even have time to get into it this segment. We may have to go to the next segment if we answer this one, Fred. But in the late 1990s, when all the dot-coms were going crazy and the NASDAQ was going through the roof, when we come back after these messages, I want you to tell us how tempted you were to abandon some of your chicken stock strategies and maybe go for the madness of crowds, the mania that was going on in the 1990s, as Mr. McKay said in 1842, extraordinary popular delusions and the madness of crowds. Were you tempted in the late 1990s? We're going to get Fred to tell us about that right after these messages. It's 20 till. Stay with us. We're back at 17 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Let me remind you, coming up in the hour straight ahead, Don Lambrow is going to join us, and we're going to talk about the Middle East. He's the chief political correspondent for the Washington Times, and we're going to ask him what his thoughts are on what's going on in the Middle East these days. Is it deteriorating? Are we in trouble over there? What's he think? And that's going to come up in the next half hour. And then after that, Peter Meyer will join us. And he'll teach us how to create and dominate new markets. Even as small business owners, we can do it, folks. And he's going to tell us how to do that. Fred Siegel is our guest, ladies and gentlemen. He's the author of Investing for Cowards. He's got a radio show. Fred, remind us the station that it's on out of New Orleans, I think.
Yeah, it's on WWL. That's the home station, 870 AM. And, we have a number one in the Gulf South, so we're real proud of that.
And that comes on from 12 Central to 2 o'clock?
Right.
On Saturday. 2.
Well, what we need to do is broadcast on the web like you do. That's a good idea. I listen to you on the web.
I appreciate that. Well, we've been doing it since the January of 98.
Actually, I'm interested in your next two interviews, so I'll probably leave it on and listen.
I appreciate that. And that's on noon to 2, folks, Central Time. If you're listening in the Southeast, and that's 840, did you say?
Oh, 870.
870. 870 on
right.
Your AM dial. It's one of those blasters, folks, that flamethrower stations, they call them. Fred, back in the 1840s, a guy named McKay wrote a book called Extraordinary Popular Delusions and the Madness of Crowds. And he was talking about the South Sea. He wrote about the South Sea bubble and the tulipomania and the Mississippi scheme and all that. And when people, over at least three different examples of where people just lost their head and invested money in things that made absolutely no sense, same thing happened in the late 90s. Now, I want to know how your tried-and-true program of investing in chicken stocks was sorely, if it was sorely tested in the late 1990s, and if you felt any pressure to break your trend.
Well, and, you know, that's what they call the herd syndrome today, naturally.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, there was some pressure, but it was from clients. You know, when they start seeing all this tremendous push-up, they say that, well, they want a piece of that, and now, the chicken stocks, by the way, were doing very well, too. So that was a help. They
mm-hmm.
were doing better than average because the road on which they were traveling was doing better than average. So they were doing well. Most of the clients or the portfolios I manage are people who are somewhat conservative. They don't want to lose the money. But in many cases, what we would do, we would create a very smaller account, managed account,
mm-hmm.
and we'd take advantage of some of those high techs. And what we had to do, though, was we had to use what we call trailing stops, because we knew that it looked like a bubble, but starting about 1998 was a big pullback. There was a three-month pullback in 1998. The NASDAQ was down 30%,
mm-hmm.
but it was over 3 months. And then it started going up again. So we joined in on that a little bit, but by using stops, stop loss, and really that's some jargon. We have to tell
mm-hmm.
people you can put an order in when you buy a stock. If it hits a certain point underneath the price where you bought it, it automatically becomes a sell order, you know, and you
right.
sell it. And that helps to protect your principal, makes it unemotional. Well, when you go into a situation like the bubble in high tech, as we did too, a little bit of our money, then what we would do, we put a stop loss. And, well, it kept going up and up and up. So what we do, every week we'd adjust that stop loss higher. And that's what they call a trailing stop. Uh-huh. In other words, it trails the price of the stock. So eventually, when it did start pulling back, we hit those stops, we went to cash. And
you made money.
Yeah, we're able to preserve the majority of the money.
So you got out.
Yeah. You don't always know in a situation like that when the top is or when the bottom is. And, you know, one of the biggest problems for a stock market investor is when to sell. And that's a problem even for the pros, for everyone. Because when it's going up, you think it's going to go up forever. That's the psychology of it. When it comes down, you think, well, it's about to turn back up. So if you can create a certain and have a discipline and have a stop-loss order in there, then when it hits it, you're out, and you know that, hey, you want to stay on the side for a little while.
Well, your trailing stop, as you call it, I think, is that right, what you call it, the trailing
That's
stop?
That's right. You got it.
That is the reality and sanity that you install into your plan, which is going to ultimately, potentially, be rife with greed and irrational exuberance, isn't it?
That's right. So you can take advantage of it. You don't know how long it'll last. It lasted longer than many expected. But that way you're in on it, and maybe that stop loss will be 10 or 15% lower. You know, you have to make a decision. You have to then use that discipline to stick with it. But once it hits it, you say, hey, that's over, at least for the time being. Let's stay on the sideline with cash.
Let's talk about some of the jargon basics that you have in Chapter 2 of your book. The first one is earnings. Tell us what earnings is.
Yeah, really what that is what the company makes. That's the profits that the company makes.
Not revenue.
No.
It's what's on the bottom line.
Yeah, and, you know, there are different investors that feel like revenue or cash flow or different things mean something, and they all do. But profits is what you hear the most about, and that's what we're looking at in our chicken stock philosophy. And profits are the bottom line. So just like any small business, this is the same for the big business. You take your revenues, you take your expenses, and what is left is profits, and hopefully that's a positive number.
but oftentimes you'll hear people like you in the business that you're in use the word earnings, and folks, that's what they mean. They're not talking about, you know, the earnings of a company. It's not like your earnings in your business. In your job, if you earn a living, if you earn a salary, that's your top line, that's your revenue. But for a company, it's the bottom line.
That's right, and you know, the people in the media and on Wall Street use a lot of financial mumbo-jumbo, what I like to call. And so when I'm on the radio, I always use the term profits.
Right.
Sometimes I'll say earnings or profits, but make sure that people do understand it. And you don't want to be not communicating, you know, if you're have a radio show. So and that's one reason I wrote the book, to help people to understand and be able to see through all that financial jargon that these guys use.
Stand by, Fred. We're going to take another quick break. We'll be right back with Fred Siegel, ladies and gentlemen, the author of Investing for Cowards Like Me. Tintel, stay with us. We're back at 7 till. Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Fred Siegel is our guest, ladies and gentlemen, and his radio show is on AM 870 at 12 to 2. I should say noon to 2 on Saturday, every Saturday, broadcasting all over the southeastern part of the United States. And what's the name of that radio station again?
It's called WWL.
WWL.
Yeah, and the program's called Talking Money.
Yeah, check that out when you get a chance with Fred Siegel. And the book is called Investing for Cowards. And Fred, tell us where it's available, please.
It's available in just about every bookstore. We're getting near the end. I mean, they're going to have to start printing again, but you can still order it if the bookstore is out. Some of them have been calling the publisher and Ingram, you know, the situation, and they're saying they're out of books. They need some more books. I know Amazon.com still has them, and they're going to be reprinting pretty soon.
Okay, and
I think they're still available.
What about your website? You want to give us a website?
Yeah, it's thesiegelgroup.com, and that's spelled S-I-E-G-E-L, or you can do fredsiegel.com.
All right, check that out. Let's talk about some jargon again. Fred, what about, now I think most people know what a dividend is. That's the money that the company has left over or that they carve out of their earnings to pay the shareholders.
Right, and they pay that every quarter, and that's
well, they pay it quarterly.
Yeah.
They don't. Now, your stocks pay every quarter, but some stocks, some companies don't, in fact, some companies don't pay any dividends.
Oh, yeah, a lot don't, and some very famous ones, like, you know, the one that's been in the news recently has been Microsoft.
Mm-hmm.
And they have, $60 billion in reserves, but they're not paying a dividend because they want to reinvest, although there's a feeling because of the new tax law they may start to pay a dividend. But
I thought the decision had been made to do that.
I think you're right. I believe it has been. It's going to be a very small dividend.
Right.
Yeah. But at least it's something going back to the shareholders, a check they can spend, mm-hmm. and still they can be owning the stock. So you don't have to sell the stock in order to make money.
One of the things you hear investment experts talk about all the time is the P&E ratio, the price-to-earnings ratio. Tell us what that means.
Yeah, essentially it's the price of the stock they're talking about. So the P-E ratio can change a lot. Earnings are the profits. You can almost say the P-P ratio. Whoops, but we don't want to get involved in a mistake there. But the earnings or the profits and how much that will go into the price of the stock. Mm-hmm. And so that ratio can be higher or lower, and that is one way that one can value a stock.
Tell us how to use that.
Whether or not it might be overpriced or underpriced.
Tell us how to use that.
Yeah, essentially, the higher the P-E ratio, the higher the price is relative to the value, relative mm-hmm. to what it's earning or what the profits are.
So if the P-E ratio is 20, then maybe that's kind of high, but if it's 8 or 9, maybe that's a good value? Is that what you're saying?
That's the point. But it can be deceiving. And
It could be 50 and 20, folks, but the point is whatever you've decided is your range that you're comfortable with, that's how you, the lower the number, the better value it is typically.
Yeah, typically that's true. But what you have to do in order to evaluate it, you can get this on the web or a lot of times in the financial journals, you have to see for any sector, what is the average price-to-earnings ratio for that sector? And then if you have a stock in that sector, then you can look and say, well, now this one's a little high, so maybe the price of the stock is a little high.
Mm-hmm.
Or this is low, maybe I want to buy that because the price of the stock is a little low relative to its profits or relative to its earnings.
Mm-hmm.
But so your big blue chips tend to be lower price-to-earnings ratio, whereas your high-tech, your Microsofts and Intels of the world tends to be a lot higher because they don't pay out much of a dividend, and they tend to reinvest a lot of their earnings. But
mm-hmm.
so you just have to look at the sector. But the lower the P.E., This is a rule of thumb. It doesn't always apply, but generally it's considered the lower the P.E. ratio, the 8s and the 7s, the safer the stock is.
I see. What about basis points? What about the term basis points?
Yeah, we hear that a lot.
One of the ways we hear that is when the Fed talks about raising and lowering rates.
That's true. They'll say 25 basis points, and they really should use percentages, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But the people on Wall Street use basis points because they're dealing with hundreds of millions of dollars, and a basis point means something. And essentially what that is, that's 1/100th of a percent.
Mm-hmm.
So 25 basis points is 1/4 of 1%.
Mm-hmm.
But in order to get even smaller, then they'll do like 5 basis points. A lot of times when these traders are trading bonds, and you'll see this in the bond market world, they'll say, well, I'm going to take 5 basis points as my payment. And it's easier for them to calculate than to say, you know, 0.05%. It's just 5 basis points.
But it's basically a half a percent.
What 50 basis points.
I mean, 50 basis points.
Right, 50 is a half.
Right, okay.
But they'll still use basis points even if they can make it more understandable to the public, because they're not as interested in the public understanding as them being able to have this kind of terminology, so to speak, or jargon that they understand.
Fred, we're going to have to wrap it up. Will you come back and do this again?
I would be delighted. It's the fastest 30 minutes of my life.
Thank you. Fred Siegel, ladies and gentlemen, Investing for Cowards. I got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. I'll be right back.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.